Welcome to the Standard Deviations podcast, brought to you by Orion Advisor Solutions and hosted by Dr. Daniel Crosby, Orion's Chief Behavioral Officer and New York Times bestselling author. This year, Dr. Crosby embarks on a compelling exploration of meaning, what it is, why it matters, and how you can create more of it in your life. Each episode will only be available for 1 week, so don't miss your chance to listen. Tune in regularly and join the journey.
Seek out the unexpected. Jorge Bucay is an Argentine psychotherapist and writer whose books have sold more than 2 million copies around the world. My favorite of these is Let Me Tell You a Story, Tales Along the Road to Happiness, which contains a tender tale of a lesson learned from a childhood observation. The author writes, "When I was a small boy, I loved going to the circus. Animal acts were my favorite. I was quite impressed by the elephant, who is, as I found out later, the favorite animal of all children. The elephant's part of the show was a display of his huge weight, his immense size and power. Then, as the show was approaching its end, slightly before the elephant had to return to his tent, he was standing tied to a tiny wooden stake driven partially into the ground. A chain was wrapped around his feet. The size of the stake was very small, and the part of it that was driven into the ground was even smaller. The chain that was wrapped around the legs of the elephant was quite large, but it seemed quite obvious, even to my childish mind, that an animal whose power was so large, so immense that it could rip trees off the ground and hurl them to others, was more than enough to let the elephant just rise and walk away." Bucay's young mind wondered how the mighty elephant could be held captive by such an insignificant restraint, and why the elephant didn't rise and free himself. Seeking an answer, he asks his teacher, father, uncle, and other adults in his life, none of whom seemed to have the answer he was after. Years later, he discovered the uncomfortable truth of how the mighty elephant is constrained by a feeble chain. The elephant doesn't try to escape because it has been tied to a similar stake ever since it was very, very young. Says Bucay, "The small elephant would push, pull, and struggle with all his strength trying to free himself, but he would fail. Despite all his efforts, he would fail again and again because that stake and chain was too big for his strength. The elephant would sleep exhausted from his efforts to free himself and would wake up the next day. All his struggles would fail the next day too, and a third day and a fourth, and many tiresome, exhausting days after those. Then one day would come, a horrible day for the history of our elephant, a day that he would just give up and accept his fate, deciding that he was too weak to escape, that his strength was not enough and would never be enough. The elephant had learned to be helpless. Like the elephant, many of us find ourselves chained to lives that seem small, but also tether us to old ways of moving through the world. We are free, but for the limitations that exist in our own hearts and our own minds that we have placed upon ourselves from years of thinking that we are unfree. As Bucay says beautifully, you are strong, your chains are weak, and you can set yourself free anytime you want. To begin to break these shackles, we must first break free of the habits and the routines that form them. Like most behavioral tendencies, habituation, defined as the diminishing of a physiological or emotional response to a frequently repeated stimulus, has both positive and negative implications. The positive, evolutionarily adaptive purpose of habituation is that it helps us bounce back from even dramatically negative life events. This is seen powerfully in a 1978 study that looked at two groups with vastly different fortunes, lottery winners and paraplegic accident victims. When asked about how much happiness they gained from everyday endeavors, such as watching TV, talking to a friend, or receiving a compliment, the winners' ratings were 3.33 out of 5 compared to 3.48 for the accident victims. The total happiness score of lottery winners was greater than that of the paraplegics, but as the author notes, the paraplegic rating of present happiness is still above the midpoint of the scale. The accident victims did not appear nearly as unhappy as might have been expected. This is habituation in action. Not surprisingly, the correlation also works in reverse, with those who have a history of depression also showing lower levels of habituation. Tali Sherratt and Cass Sunstein cite research in their book, Look Again, that examined the response of a group of people to receiving a failing grade on an exam. The initial negative emotional response was uniform among those who had flunked. They were all upset. They were all distraught. But those with no history of depression quickly habituated and bounced back, while those more prone to depression continued to ruminate on their failure. Just as surely as habituation can help us return to our happiness set point, though, it can also blind us to the beauty all around us, causing us to take simple pleasures for granted. It is also the process by which the metaphorical tethers in our lives keep us staked to a life less meaningful than it could be. If habituation is the process by which familiarity causes us to overlook everyday wonders, it stands to reason that shaking things up a bit could lead us to a greater level of appreciation, and the research bears that out. Suppose I ask you to name your favorite song, what would you say? If you're wondering, mine is How to Disappear Completely by Radiohead. Thank you very much for asking. Now that I know your favorite song, I give you two options. I can let you listen to it without interruptions, or I can let you listen to pieces of it, punctuated by shorter interruptions every 30 seconds or so. Seems like an easy choice, right? Like you, 99% of people choose no breaks. After all, why mess up a good thing? But research shows that people enjoy songs with more breaks and are willing to pay twice as much to hear the music in concert. As Sunstein and Sherratt say, this is because breaks remove habituation, so the joy level keeps bouncing back. The tendency to habituate applies on vacation and at home, too. While advising a tourism company, Sherratt found that those on holiday at a resort were happiest at hour 43 of their trip. This allowed them enough time to settle in and experience a number of firsts. The first look at the sea, the first golden sunset, the first strong drink by the pool. After hour 43, however, habituation sets in, and the vacationers began to take the beauty around them for granted. Likewise, married couples reported feeling most in love with their partners in two settings: when reuniting with them after some time away, and when seeing them in a new context, for instance, on a stage or interacting with work colleagues. This is why I bring my wife to watch me come speak at conferences. So much of marriage is drudgery. We tend to children, pay bills, do dishes, and the newness of having spent some time apart or in a new context allowed for what Julia Roberts brilliantly dubbed re-sparkling. For those for whom life might seem stale, predictable, or meaningless, the science of habituation points to some concrete means of making change. One, mix up your setting. Travel has been shown to pay a long-lasting happiness dividend, whereas buying stuff does not. The reason? Travel requires us to learn a new language, a foreign currency, unusual customs, unfamiliar vistas are all novel stimuli that demand something new and interesting from us. On the flip side, we quickly become habituated to even the nicest things. That fancy car eventually just becomes the way you get your groceries, while that big house ends up being merely where you end up throwing your dirty socks. The next tip is to make splurges occasional. Humankind is capable of adapting to even the most luxurious lifestyle. As one economist said, pleasure results from incomplete and intermittent satisfaction of desires. To avoid habituation, make your splurges infrequent enough that they remain special. Savor the good stuff. Like a song interrupted by a short break, the best parts of your life should be paused intermittently just to be enjoyed. When engaging in something new or fun, take just a minute to acknowledge how great it is and give thanks for what you're experiencing. question your habits. Depending on who you ask and how it's measured, between 40 and 95% of our daily actions are habitual. The upside to this is that deferring to what has worked in the past allows us to operate on a sort of cruise control that saves us brain power. The downside is, of course, like the elephant, we can start to make the habits chains of our own undoing. Don't be afraid to adjust your routine or question why you've done certain things in certain ways. And finally, diversify your life. What's good for your portfolio is also good for your life. Individuals who diversify their experiences, seeking out new people, places, foods, and experiences, report higher levels of meaning in life than those who do not. In Being in Nothingness, existential philosophy giant Jean-Paul Sartre asks us to think back on a time when we've had a waiter at a restaurant who was too, well, waiterly. At first glance, this waiter may appear to be engaged in the normal actions of a Parisian waiter, serving, refilling drinks, and generally rushing to and fro in service of his customers. But upon closer examination, an unease overtakes you. His actions don't seem authentic. They are, as Sartre says, a little too precise, a little too rapid. He flirts, he jokes, he flatters, but does all of this a little too eagerly. As Sartre explains, we need not watch long before we can explain it. He is playing at being a waiter in a cafe. As philosophy professor Johnny Thompson writes, he is effectively reading a script or moving to a choreographed dance, and however perfectly he says his lines and makes his step, we recognize that they are not his own. Sartre called this escape from authenticity mauvaise foi, or bad faith. It is a form of inauthenticity that seeks to escape the central task we all have, to take responsibility for creating a life. By playing a part, we are able to move through the world in ways that are unlikely to provoke the ire of those around us, but that are ultimately insufficient to give us purpose. For most of us, a million little daily habits make up the complex choreography of this dance of bad faith. It's just what responsible people do, we tell ourselves, before driving to a job that slowly kills us, or laying down beside someone we never loved. Like Sartre's imagined waiter, we are not living, we are playing at life. The road out of bad faith detours through what Sartre referred to as negative ecstasy, a bright moment of realization that you are freer than you have previously realized. You can quit that job, you can write that book, you can take that trip and save that marriage. Your life doesn't have to be an endless series of little habits that have the semblance of progress but ultimately take you nowhere. We tend to stuff this realization back into its box rather quickly because it demands a great deal of us. It asks us to move, to risk, and to dare. Acting on the reality of our own radical freedom isn't easy. But the alternative is to be staked to an unfilling existence from which we could easily break free if we only had the courage to pull on that chain. My friends, I hope this week you will uproot your chains and that the things that you've learned today will be a positive force in your life this week. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with a friend. Please share it on social media, rate and review it on Apple or Spotify or wherever you're listening. If you like these conversations about meaning, I'd encourage you to check out my book, The Soul of Wealth, which looks at the world of money through the lens of meaning, just as we are looking through life through a meaningful lens on the podcast this week. I look forward to connecting with you all next week. And as always, if you have comments or questions about the show, the easiest place to find me is probably on LinkedIn, Daniel Crosby, PhD. Until then, thank you so much, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to Standard Deviations. If you can't wait till next week for more behavioral finance insights, visit www.orion.com. All opinions expressed by Dr. Daniel Crosby and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of or endorsement by Orion and its affiliates, subsidiaries, and employees. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for legal, tax, and investment decisions. The opinions are based upon information the participants consider reliable.